Hello everyone, and welcome to another recap race analysis here on the Cycling Dane extra channel, or if you're listening on the podcast, hello. And today was a very interesting stage, finishing in Andorra, not Andorra the country. But as always, to talk through this chaotic sprint stage is Patrick Blako, Audi Cycling, and one third of the Echelon Cycling Podcast. And Patrick, what exactly happened on today's stage?
Yes, we went from Aki Telme to Andorra. Andorra, like Scott says, we're just the one R. So it's not like the other country. We actually finished at 4 meters today, not like 2,000 plus. But anyway, that's by the by. We had a very small breakaway today, including Lilian Carlejar, Munoz, and Stefan de Bald. That was our three-man break. They went up the road, and Carlejar pretty much just called it quits after like the cat three climb, which is really where things started to kick off today. The Col del Melogno, 7.5 kilometers at 4.8%. That's where we saw, well, firstly, they went up into the clouds because it's like 1,000 meters high. And we saw a pace being set by Visma Lisa bike, but also Lidl Trek to try and get people out the back. And although they did jettison Jakobsen and also Malia plus a couple of other people, they all eventually ended up coming back. There was a little kicker on the descent where Navarez and even Verdun had a little tumble, but nothing serious. They all got back in. But it was after that where one of the biggest stories of today happened, which was on the descent of that, going down to the Savona intermediate sprint. We saw, unfortunately, there was a crash involving Biniam Gamai. I know that Ben O'Connor was in there as well. And I also think that Ida Hubio might have been involved. There were some other names in there, but those were the major ones. Binny unfortunately went down, and although everybody else is fine, he seemed to struggle to put weight upon his right leg, but he did end up going while setting off again after the medical team had given him a check over, which is good to see. But really, unfortunately, about 5 minutes later, there's images of him crashing once more on a wet descent, left-hander, just the bike just slides out from underneath him. And yeah, he didn't look too good after that one. It didn't look like anything was broken, but he sadly abandoned the race, which is really sad to see, considering that he came third yesterday, obviously looking in fantastic form. After this, going into the Savona sprint, we saw two of the intermediate sprint bonuses being taken by the break. Kjaan Uyttebroeks did like a full launch sprint and probably hit about 700 watts or something, I think, to beat Jan Tratnik to get the one bonus second. But lots of splits happened in this rather wet kind of cobbly town where eventually things got all stitched back up, but there were about three groups going through that town because people were not willing to take risks very sensibly. Then we had about 50 kilometers of flats before we go to the Capo Mele, and you would be very much forgiven for thinking that you were watching Milano San Remo today, but just a few months later, which, because we literally were on the same coastal road. As a matter of fact, if you carried on for another hour, you would have gone through Imperia, the Cipressa, and actually finished in San Remo. That would have been a cool stage, but we did take in the Capo Mele climb, 1.8 kilometers at 4.4%, and we saw Ineos really drilling the pace. I was like, oh, well, you know, they're just trying to get to 3K to go. But no, it was Filippo Ganna who really had the big plans on the Capo Mele. He launched it. He was doing some insane watts. I think it popped up like 650. Danny Van Poppel tried to follow him. Pasqualon tried to follow him as well. Some person from Bardiani tried to go as well to bridge over. Eventually, Lidl Trek were the first to blink, and they were said, okay, well, we need to shut this down because he is going to make it, because it was a descent down to the finish with a very, like, 800 meters to flat the finish. So Lidl Trek get on the front and just about bring Filippo Ganna back of about, what would you say, maybe 700 meters to go. It wasn't long to go. Alpsin is still there with Caden Groves, Melia's still there, and Caleb Ewan's still there, Lawrence Piffy's still there, Gaviria, every sprinter is pretty much all there, and it's such a high-speed sprint. We see Consonni leading out Milan, we then see Christophe Laporte bringing up Olav Koig to the left of Milan, which, funnily enough, Milan then left his lead up man to then take Christophe Laporte's wheel for 50 meters and then launched off of that. So that was a rather shooting yourself in the foot from Visma Lisa bike. And Milan is up against the barriers. Nobody can get through. Koig tries to come past. Groves tries to come past. Melier tries to come past. But nobody can beat the humongous Italian powerhouse that is Jonathan Milan. He was probably on the front for at least 300 meters or so in that sprint. He was just incredibly strong today. There was no really getting past him. But the top 10 of today's stage, stage four, is that Jonathan Milan takes the win ahead of Caden Groves, Phil Bauhaus, Olaf Coy, Tim Melia, Davide Ballerini, Fernando Gaviria, Enrico Zanagello. Madis Mikels finishes ninth after Binny crashed earlier. And Giovanni Lonardi rounds out the top 10 for Paul Ticometa. Scott, I don't know, where should we start with all this?
What a stage. Like, yeah, the sprint stages are very interesting this year. Yeah, obviously, Jonathan Milan, we might as well. Yeah, why don't we start there with the winner? We talked about the number of second places he's had, and last year didn't really have the lead-out train to kind of guide him in the right place. Do you think that's sorted now? Do you think Jonathan Milan is just going to destroy everyone now?
I'm not quite willing to go that far just yet. I think this is an insane sprinting field, but my word, did Lidl Trek nail it today? Like, they did such a good job. And I did slight them yesterday, saying that they should have done better. And I stand by that, but they did a really good job today. Like, they were absolutely perfect. And I think, yeah, best lead-out train in the race. And it wouldn't surprise me if Milan just took a load more sprint victories this race. I think it's really up to other teams to try and see how they can beat Lidl Trek. But, you know, when you got Melia, Coy and Groves, you know, these guys are all looking really fast right now. And I think that, you know, it's definitely not a done deal where it's just one sprinter's just head and shoulders above everybody else. And I think that's good, because you could say in like the tour last year, maybe the sprinter are a little bit like, oh, you know, Philipsen. I think it's not going to be like that this year in the Giro. So I think it's really good that we've got a high level of competition.
Yeah, certainly. Tim Melia, as we know, already taking a stage win in this year's Giro d'Italia, like we said, probably the best sprinter in the first quarter of the year, arguably. But yeah, where is the biggest threat here? Is it Caden Groves? Caden Groves came very close today. Melia, like we said, Jakobsen, obviously I'm going to say Tobias Lund Andreasen, even though Robbie McEwen named him the wrong name on Eurosport. That was quite strange.
I think it's Melia still. I think it's Melia for the first week at least. I think he just slowly kind of peters off in like the second or third week. Yeah, I think I'd say it's Melia. I'd say it's Coy as well. Groves is looking really good, actually. He's had a pretty rough year, but I'd say that Groves, considering that Alps and the Koenig also have a whole team pretty much built around him, is a really dangerous threat as well. Bauhaus, I'm not really considering because he's got not a full lead-out train and he's just a little bit too inconsistent, I think, in the sprints. And yeah, maybe Jakobsen can do something when it's a pan-flat sprint. Maybe he can get up there as well. We haven't really seen much of Caleb Ewan. I think he's just seemingly not in the correct position in any of these. But he's always up there in the intermediate sprint, so he's clearly quite keen. So I'll throw Ewan in there as well. But I do think that, yeah, it's Melia and Coy and Groves. I'll give us the main competitors.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame with Caleb Ewan. That team has absolutely had terrible luck with Eddie Dombal, so leaving the race, like we said yesterday. But we can't not. I know you mentioned it in the recap part of this, but Filippo Ganna attacking, I like that excitement. I thought he was going to make it. I think I moan quite a lot about these TT riders who have a bit of a punch, like Ganna, who don't just try it. Like, just try. It's a sprint stage. You don't have a sprinter. Just go on the offensive. And he well and truly did that. But I think it also just shows how fast sprinting teams are, that are two-time world champion in the time trial discipline, Olympic champion, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he couldn't hold them away. And yeah, I thought that was quite cool.
Yeah, I did too. I thought he was going to make it, to be honest with you. I thought somebody's got to go faster than Filippo Ganna here to bring him back. I'm like, that's not going to be easy to do because he is an absolute monster. So I honestly thought he was going to do it. I thought if he can get to the top of his climb, get on the descent, and maybe, I think it was the descent actually, which killed him off a bit, because once you get that fight for position behind in the sprint trains, I think that was really spelled the end of Ganna's attack. But you know what? I rate Ineos Grenadiers for giving it a go. They tried it with G as well yesterday with that attack with Tade. And I'm liking this kind of spontaneous Ineos Grenadiers. It's very unlike that, I feel. And I'm all for it. Like, keep it coming.
Yeah, no, I agree. We were a bit hard on them the other day saying, well, no, they were doing stupid things. Let's be honest. We're very critical of them when they're working and don't have the favorite. It's a bit silly. But that aside, I mean, something we didn't mention yesterday, which I thought was quite fitting. Did you see Tim Merlier do this? For our podcast listeners, that's a W. I didn't know what that meant. I thought Wolfpack or something like that. It was actually for Wouter Weyland, who passed away in the 2011 Giro d'Italia. So I thought that was a very special moment, even more so. But I mean, bringing it back to this stage here, and the Maglia Cammino is quite an open competition now, but more Intermarché. Obviously, Binyam Girmay crashing twice, having an absolutely dreadful time. And I think bad luck has kind of followed him almost ever since that champagne bottle incident. Yeah, I know he's taken wins here and beaten Wout van Aert and Tour de Suisse, etc. But like, again, wet day in the Tour of Flanders on his birthday last year where he crashed. Just unlucky. And what do you think Intermarché are going to do now? Lilian Kamerjian up there in the Masters Jersey classification. But yeah, it's their star rider. Not a great situation for them.
It's not good. I mean, we talked, you know, on the Echelon Cycling podcast. And I'm once again plugging a podcast within a podcast. But we were talking about the Intermarché team and how if you didn't have Binyam Girmay in this team, we said it isn't actually that great to the team. And I think that's the worry, is that it's a team very much focused around that one rider. Yeah, I think Kamerjian, like him in the breaks, I expect Magnus Mikkels will now become their de facto sprinter because he came ninth today. But I think it just shows the threat that relying upon one big name to bring in all your results in a Grand Tour can certainly have, because if in a very unfortunate scenario like today happens, you're really stuck with the amount of opportunities you have left in the race. So I think Intermarché can rally a little bit around Kamerjian and Maddie's Mikkels, but we'll wait and see what happens. I think it's really looking like got to try and get in those breakaways as much as you can.
I mean, this stage, talking about UAE, really highlighted what is the point of Milano. Why is Milano here? We said it, Brendan Minolti, Marc Soler, one of these guys should definitely be in this team. I have no idea why he's here. No offense, Milano. He's a great rider, but this is an A-list sprinter field, like you said.
Yeah. I think, to be fair to him, I think, didn't he have a puncture or something?
Yeah, no, I know. Like, yeah, it wasn't his fault, but my point was that there's like six big names here in terms of the sprints, and yeah.
Yeah, it's like, say Milano didn't have that puncture, hypothetically, where would he have come in that sprint? Like fifth or sixth maybe at best. Like, I'm, yeah, again, no offense, but you know, why would you bring a sprinter here to like the most stacked sprint field of this year, pretty much? Like, it's like rocking up to shoulder press or something, isn't it? It's on the UAE tour, and it's just like, I think it just, yeah, once again, we're gonna keep banging this drum, but it would have been more useful for UAE team Emirates to bring somebody else like McNulty or Sivakov or one of our like fifth best climbers, basically, who would have been able to be in front of Micah, you know, in the mountain train. Yeah, it'll just continue to confuse me, to be honest, as to why they've got Milano in this race.
Well, anyways, with that downer on Milano, that's basically it for our race recap analysis here on the Cycling Dane Extra channel. Make sure to hit the like button if you haven't already. That really helps us out. And subscribe to the channel if you're new here, if you want to stay up to date with all our Giro d'Italia coverage. And make sure to check out Patrick's own channel, Audio Cycling, as well. That will be linked down below. And the Echelon Cycling Podcast, where he's even more. So yeah, with that, thank you very much for watching, and we will see you tomorrow.